Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Impossible Kid, Parenting a Strong-Willed Child with Love and Grace by Lucille Williams with Monica Welch, Lucille's own impossible kid. Narrated by Lucille Williams. Introduction. What's important? What really matters to you? Within minutes of the birth of my first child, I couldn't think of anything more important to do with my life than raise my family. I knew I wanted to raise a child who would love and depend on God. I knew I wanted to shelter her from harm. I wanted her to become a productive member of society, one that didn't live off the system or, even worse, in the system. I wanted her to one day be a woman of character and integrity. I knew what my aim was, but I had no idea how and if I would ever hit the target. What I did not know was how hard it would be. I did not know how this cute little helpless child would pull, tear, and rip open my heart and send me into tailspins, shaking my head and asking God, "Okay, what next?" When a mother's journey begins, one is venturing into the unknown. It's hard to imagine what this tiny little baby will be as an adult. My journey was difficult, heart-wrenching, laborious, and yet joyful, worth every tear and strife. My child seemed impossible to me, but God chose me to be the mother of this impossible child. And what we deem impossible, God makes possible. Luke chapter 18, verse 27. The idea to write this book came from my daughter. When Monica was 17 with her "I Can Conquer the World" outlook, she said, "Write a book about raising me. You always say I was your hardest. Then at the end of every chapter, I'll write what I think, my perspective." I have to admit that at first I thought it was a crazy idea, but the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And now that she's a mom of an impossible kid, it seemed that this was the perfect time for a book such as this. So there you have it, the birth of our mother-daughter story. Everyone has a story. This is our story. This is my parenting story. Perhaps you will see your own story as you wander through this book. And Mom, thank you for picking up this book, and thank you for all you do. It matters. Chapter 1. Nothing will be impossible with God. Luke chapter 1, verse 37. It was Monica's first day of high school. I sat in the driver's seat in our driveway waiting for her to get in my car. She was nervous. I was nervous for her. Watching her hustle to the car, I thought to myself how beautiful she was with her long, flowing blonde hair, gorgeous green eyes, and a new outfit, red button-up collared shirt and jeans. I was so proud of her. She had grown into such a lovely young lady. But as she got in the car and sat down, her shirt raised and I could see her skin. I could see the side of her gorgeous bod. I screeched, "Oh my gosh, I see skin. Look at all this skin. You look like a slut." She said, "Mom, it's not that bad." I put the car in reverse and pulled out of the driveway. We couldn't risk her being late. When she got out of the car, I said my standard, "I love you, have a good day." But loving Mom was lost at, "You look like a slut." Instead of endearment and encouragement, she got fearful, judgmental, crazy Mom. Not my finest Mom moment, not even close. Once on campus, Monica found a friend from church youth group and asked, "Ashley, do I look okay?" Her sweet friend not only told her she looked great, but asked one of the boys to chime in and compliment Monica on how she looked. Mom bombs, friend saves. When Monica told me how much that hurt her, my response was, "Honey, I am so sorry. That was a terrible thing for me to have done. Please forgive me." She forgave me, and then we laughed. I realized the shirt wasn't any big deal, and a little side skin wasn't scandalous at all. We laugh more now, but it grieves me even today, and I wish I could have a do-over on that skin-filled, grace-absent day. Why didn't I say, "Sweetheart, you look so pretty, and I'm so proud of you"? Why? What went wrong? I allowed my fears to take over and spill onto her. That's the thing as a mom. The good as well as the bad spills over. I'm sure all three of my kids have lasting side effects from many of my not-so-perfect parenting moments. My shortcomings were continually in my face. I'd pray a regular prayer of, "Lord, I know I'm falling short as a mom. Please fill in the gaps where I am lacking." My mantra became, "I know I'm messing up my kids, but I'll pay for their therapy." Well, now that my kids are adults, my mantra is, "Sorry, guys, I'm paying for my own therapy, and you can pay for yours," which I highly recommend because I know you need it. I was your mom. As you probably already figured out, there will be no mom shaming in this book. We need to cheer for and support one another with no judgment. Life is hard. Growing is hard. Being a parent is almost impossible. I learned early on that I had to cling to God and be open to learning and growing as a person. Even today, now that I'm a grandmother, I'm still working my life out and learning. All we can do is try to grow through our pain and mistakes and not judge ourselves in the process. Sometimes it's most difficult to extend grace to ourselves. I start with this story as my way of saying, please have grace with yourself and give yourself a break. Being a mom, in my opinion, is the most difficult calling you'll ever have. Our kids have a way of pushing us to our outermost limits and then back around again and again and again. They have a way of bringing out what is deeply buried inside of us. Sometimes ugly emotions rise to the surface and we think, what is this? And what am I supposed to do with it? I felt those difficult feelings throughout my parenting journey. You may be feeling some yourself. We can grow. We can change. We can apologize. And we can love ourselves and our families in the process. Now that that's out of the way, allow me to take you back to the beginning. The beginning. I couldn't sleep. All I could do was cry, weeping because I was scared that I was making a wrong decision. Feelings of certainty were nowhere to be found, but I longed for them. At 19 years old, I had much growing up to do. It was the night before my wedding day. I was in my sister's room because my room had long been cleaned out and refurnished. Since I was living with my beloved, there was no reason for my parents to leave my room intact. When my grandmother came into town for the wedding, sharing a room with my younger sister was the logical choice. Grandma must not know that Lucille is living with her boyfriend. We tried to put on a ruse. When Grandma returned home to New Jersey, she told the family, "Do they think I'm stupid? She wasn't living there. None of her things were there. None of her clothes were there. What am I, stupid?" Sorry, Grandma, we tried. My sister, the 16-year-old maid of honor, did her best to console the crying bride to no avail. "Why are you crying?" she questioned. "Because I'm scared," I answered through my streaming tears. "Then why are you marrying him?" she asked. "Because I love him." I love him. It's the answer to everything when you're 19. For me, it wasn't just my answer. It was my reason for making one of the biggest decisions of my life. I was young, naive, and desperate for someone to love me. And there I was on the eve of my wedding, agonizing over whether I was making a mistake. Truthfully, I felt like I was making a mistake, but I also knew I wouldn't back out, and this was the reason for my tears. The wedding day was supposed to be happy. It was supposed to be perfect. Instead, we got into an argument over the phone. My soon-to-be brother-in-law got on the phone to try to ease the tension, or more accurately, the yelling. I told him, "I'm not going to marry him. He's a jerk. Did you hear what he said to me?" But later that day, we did take a walk down the aisle. My brother-in-law somehow got us to resolve our fight, only the first of many more to come. And that was how our family started. 5 years into the battle, I mean marriage, our first child was born. I was in no way ready to raise a child. I had not grown up myself. Being emotionally immature, ignorant about life, stubborn, antagonistic, self-centered, and completely self-consumed, I was not going to be awarded Mother of the Year. Dealing with a lot of my own pain and emotional struggles from my past left me ill-equipped to deal with life in a healthy way, let alone raise a child. Nonetheless, after Mike and I had been married for just over 4 years, we decided to begin trying for a baby. This was going to be a huge adjustment for us because I was in deep pursuit of an acting career. A better way to put it would be obsessed. I was obsessed with pursuing my career and had taken a job as a food server so that I could be free for auditions. This was my dream since I was a child, and nothing was going to get in my way, not even my husband. It was my search for significance, and I was good at it. I got to pretend to be someone else. When you don't like being you, acting is a rush. My talent agent was sending me out regularly for auditions, and I spent way too much money taking acting classes, which were sometimes late at night. And I'm embarrassed to admit I enjoyed the attention I received from other men in the process. Can you say rocky marriage? We were like a bomb waiting to explode. Balance was something God would teach me later. We made the decision that I would be a stay-at-home mom. Many women successfully balance kids and career, and if that's you, I take my hat off to you. I knew I did not have the capacity to do both. I could hardly hold my life together without children. It wasn't an easy decision, though. I felt like I was giving up and giving away everything I ever dreamed of, and it meant sacrificing my significance and worth. After getting pregnant, nighttime felt like Christmas Eve. I'd be wide awake because I was so excited about being a mom. Never mind, it would take 9 months. Most nights, my anticipation would win out over sleep, and I'd read my Bible. Mike was excited too, but he was sleeping fine. A baby is coming. How can he sleep? I think the anticipation was also mixed with a lot of anxiety and fear about becoming a mom. Going to my Bible felt urgent. Mike and I had become Christians just before getting pregnant. In hindsight, God was preparing me for His plan, and those late nights were my classroom. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for prosperity and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11. God's plan for us is always better than our plan. I just needed to surrender my agenda and dreams for God's perfect design, and He would make all things beautiful in His time. As the nights went by, I'd read and spend time with God. My first mom task while waiting for the baby was to wash the baby clothes. I threw everything in the washer without separating a thing and turned everything pink. I knew it. I'm going to be a terrible mom. I can't even wash the baby clothes right. This only added to my already brewing anxiety. Weeks after my due date, I finally went into labor. After having contractions through the day and into the night, along with medication to increase my labor, my body was still not dilating. As my doctor sat in a room across the hall, I frantically screamed, "Get the doctor!" while he and my husband exchanged nods. The nurse came in and I heard my husband whisper, "Why is she bleeding?" "I'm bleeding?" I yelled. "Why am I bleeding?" My doctor rushed in and told my husband I needed an emergency C-section. I was hemorrhaging. The hospital staff called in the assisting surgeon, but he got into a car accident on the way to the hospital. Suddenly, everyone else was frantic while I lay there paralyzed with fear. My doctor was roaring orders, commanding the staff while on the phone trying to find another surgeon. "That guy will never work with me again," we heard the doctor say. "I don't care that he got into an accident. You get here." An assisting surgeon arrived, and our Monica was born. Not exactly the birth story I had dreamed of during all those sleepless nights. But once she was in my arms, she was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. Life changed. Each day started with a different view of the world. Each decision affected not just my life, but also the life of my child. I couldn't be selfish anymore. Life suddenly became scarier and significantly more intense. While in the hospital, I felt protected. There were nurses ready to help me at the push of a button. But the thought of going home terrified me. I didn't feel like an adult. How could I raise a child? I couldn't even wash the baby clothes right. Please don't send me home with this baby, I thought. I was in no way emotionally ready to go home, but it was time. The nurse arrived with my wheelchair of terror. The baby was bundled up in her new going-home outfit. My husband and mother were excited, and I was crying so hard I could hardly breathe. The nurse and my husband helped me into the wheelchair. Beautiful little Monica was placed in my lap. Wait! I don't think I can do this. Oh no, here we go. What am I going to do? I don't know how to be a mom. I was so scared. As I was wheeled out of my hospital room and down the hall, the tears rapidly flew down my face. From the elevator all the way to the hospital lobby, my cries did not subside. How embarrassing! I can only imagine what the people watching were thinking. Here's this new mom holding her baby, going home. How sweet. Aw, look at that. What a nice picture. No, wait. That young mother is sobbing like a baby. What's the matter with her? Is there something wrong with that perfect-looking little baby? The baby looks normal. What's the deal with that young mother? What's her problem? Is the baby sick or something? Even as we left the hospital, through the lobby doors, I was still weeping. We got into our red Ford Mustang GT, a real family car. I guess we were young, scared, and stupid. Mike was driving, my mom sat in the front, and the sobbing new mother was in the back with the baby in her car seat. I cried all the way home, all throughout the 45-minute drive. My husband and mother asked me why I was crying. All I could muster through my sobs was, "I'm scared." It was one thing to make a mess of my life. But now, to potentially mess up my child's life? Well, it was too much for me to endure. Or so I thought. I had already made a disaster of my life, which included a marriage that in no way could have been described as healthy. I was petrified I would pass on all my mistakes and destroy Monica's life. I didn't want her to experience the things I had. The loneliness, the pain, the emptiness, the hopelessness. How would I protect her from all the difficulties and sorrows this life offers? She was at the start of a long journey, and I was her guide. I was so unequipped, so ignorant, and so uninformed. Even though I had spent hours reading baby books, made the painful decision to stay home, and had a room ready and waiting for her, it didn't ease any of my fears or despair. I didn't know how to be a mom. I didn't even know how to be an adult yet. The desperation was crippling. Finally, we made it home. Home was a small townhouse located on the third floor in a bad neighborhood riddled with drugs and prostitutes. To describe it better, I'll tell you a little story. One day, I was walking our dog, and it was the middle of the day. I was wearing jeans and a sweatshirt. This elderly man with no teeth asked me if I was working. I thought he wanted me to walk his dog. My husband had to explain to me what he was really asking. I told you I was naive. It was not the best place to raise a child, but it was home. The overflow of terror and tears gradually turned into a state of numbness. We were home, but our home was now changed forever. I was changed forever. I was a mom. Being present. Desperate, feeling alone and confused, spending time with God every day sustained me. I was about to learn how to be a mom, and the God of all wisdom and understanding would be my teacher. He would be my wonderful counselor. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, and my helper, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6. As I did my best to focus on my husband and my baby, not only did I quit my job, I also gave up the pursuit of acting. I put to rest a dream, but God had something far better for me. God always wants to give us what's best. Now to Him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. The world will tell you that you can have it all. Looking back, now that my kids are all adults, did I make a mistake to give up so much? This is a question I've been wrestling with since the start of this chapter. Do I really believe God gave me more than I can ever hope for? These thoughts stopped me for a while. I first had to get gut check honest with myself so that I could be completely transparent and honest with you. As I was mulling over and deep in my did I really do the best thing vortex, my son asked me to spend time with him. As we hung out and talked, my answer suddenly couldn't have been any clearer. With tears rolling down my face, I realized that, yes, God did give me abundantly beyond in all three of my adult children. My oldest allows me to share in her parenting journey and do life with her kids and family. My middle son lives in another state, but calls often and invites me to visit. He'll say after a few months, "When are you coming, Mom?" And my youngest, the one who prompted my detour from writing to hang out with him, we talked for over 3 hours that day. I wouldn't change the relationship I have with my kids for anything. Not status, not fame, not fortune, not anything. I was a present mom. I didn't miss it. I didn't miss their growing up years. I chose to show up. I wasn't anywhere near perfect, and I made oh so many mistakes. But I was there. I showed up. Showing up is one of the best things you can do for your child. Do you know the song Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin from 1974, where a father has no time for his son, and then, once the son is grown, he doesn't have time for his father? There's such profound truth there. The first step to a lasting and impactful relationship with your child is you show up. That's what you do. Be there for your child. Be present. Struggle with them. Cry with them. Learn with them. Grow with them. Stay engaged. So many things keep us busy and out of touch with our children, and some parents check out when it gets tough. We need to fight for time with them. Don't ever underestimate your presence and love in your child's life. It's not about knowing all the answers. I never did. It's about showing up. Embrace weaknesses. And He has said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me." 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. What do you do with a child who pops out of the womb a leader? A child who is so strong she thinks she can rule the world and easily rule you? How do you raise a child who wants to violate every boundary, every rule, just because it's there? Pray, cry, laugh, agonize? Yes, yes, yes. If you are shouting, "Yup, that's my kid," then sister, I'm sending you a hug. I've raised a child like that, and it was downright scary at times. But here's the hidden blessing. The advantage of impossible children is that when they stand for what they believe in, nothing can push them off their foundation. Often with guidance and a lot of prayer, impossible children turn into leaders for Jesus Christ. If I could raise one, so can you. I often felt like I had no idea what I was doing and would sometimes entertain thoughts of one of my kids ending up on the side of a road with a blanket and a beer can. If you can relate to this, you've come to the right place. One of the hardest things about parenting is feeling like you are not good enough or are doing it wrong. No one does parenting perfectly. Even the perfect parent wouldn't be the perfect parent. There's no such thing. Listen to what famous American psychologist Carl R. Rogers is quoted as saying, "What I am is good enough if I could only be it openly." As a parent, good enough is enough because being perfect isn't good enough. We need to lean on grace, grace for our children and grace for us. All we can do is our best at the time. What is the seemingly impossible parenting challenge you face today? Embrace it and acknowledge that God is molding you along with your child. Often, our largest obstacles become our most celebrated successes. Always remember, God chose you to be the parent for your child. Whatever you feel your weaknesses are, God chose you. Call on Him. You are not doing this alone. God is there for you. Ask Him for wisdom. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach. It will be given to him. James chapter 1, verse 5. Impossible kids do not have to be impossible to raise. Yes, they can be obstinate, disagreeable, strong-spirited, stubborn, and aggressive, and you can still have a great relationship with them. I will show you how you can leverage this type of personality and come out victorious. And the teen years, they don't have to be as bad as you think. You can actually enjoy your kids during this season. Today, Monica is a stay-at-home mom, married to a pastor, put herself through college earning a bachelor's degree in journalism, and was the communications director at a megachurch, having been on staff for 10 years. She's a mother who loves her children, loves the people around her, and gives grace freely. She never backs down and always sticks up for others. Together, we can make the impossible possible. Building our house. I had this concept that motherhood was always supposed to be a joy. But then Monica was so impossible, many days it felt more like a wrestling match than a joyride. When my husband and I were considering another child, he actually said with fear, "But what if we have another Monica?" Even with our hesitation, we had two more children. Tim, 16 months after Monica was born, and Joseph, 6 years after Tim was born. The boys were tough too, but Monica definitely took the award for most challenging child. Why does it seem like others float through parenting like Mary Poppins, gliding in and out on an umbrella? Why can't I be like Mary Poppins? As an infant, Monica would bang her head on the mattress in her crib, leaving red marks across her forehead. Mary Poppins never had to deal with that. I'd wonder, how am I supposed to raise her if she's pushing me around? Being a mom can be tougher than you ever imagined, and we need to know where we are going and what our end goal is. Parenting is a marathon. If we don't have focus along the way, we can veer off course, especially on days where peace seems to be a distant island, Even a trip to the bathroom includes banging on the door and screams of, "Mommy, what are you doing?" You're in there just long enough to have artwork.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?